Create Art Podcast, KDOI Rebroadcast, Comic Books as Art, interview with Mike Porter. Hello, friends. This is Timothy Kim O'Brien, your head instigator for Create Art Podcast, where I help you tame your inner critic and create more than you consume. And I use my over 20 years experience in the arts and the education world to help you out with that task. In this episode, I'm doing a rebroadcast of my old show, KDOI Podcasting, which stands for Kimo's Den of Iniquity. In that show, I did a whole season of interviews, and I didn't want them to stay on my external hard drive since I shut that show down. So I'm rebroadcasting it here to you. Today's episode is with my good friend, Mike Porter, who owned a comic book shop at the time that he was closing down, unfortunately. He resurfaced, did a comic book store as part of another store, and then closed it all down again. In this episode, we talk about what it means to be an artist, our definitions of what an artist is, and his inspiration to dip his toe into the arts when he was much younger. Now, again, in this episode, I had just come off of surgery for my neck. So my voice is going to be really gravelly, and we actually recorded it in Mike Porter's comic book shop. So the audio is going to be a little bit off, not up to the usual snuff that you're used to. But I think the content is fantastic. So I look forward to presenting to you this episode of Create Art Podcast, which is a KDOI rebroadcast. Enjoy, and I'll see you on the other side. I just want to welcome everybody back again. This is Timothy Kim O'Brien with Kimo's Den of Iniquity. And I have a wonderful guest here for you folks this week. This person I have not known for 20 years, as opposed to previous guests that I've had on the show. I've known this guest now for about 4 years, but he's somebody that I usually try to see once a month. This month, it's been more than once a month, and that's okay. It's a wonderful privilege to see this guy once a month. He provides me every month with stuff that I need. Legal stuff, folks. Legal stuff. Get your mind out of the gutter. Stuff that provides mirth and merriment to my life, and he's been a wonderful friend to me. And I'd like to introduce you all to my comic book guy, my comic book hero, my comic book genius, Mr. Mike Porter. Mike, how are you today?
I am fantastic. Life is good. I'm not going to live up to that that introduction, though.
Yes, you already have. You already have.
I just have to say right off the beginning,
yes,
this podcast, this particular podcast, is cursed.
It is cursed. Why is it cursed,
Mike? It's not. I'm not convinced we're actually going to see this come to air because we had 2 hours of amazing talk.
Yes.
Which was wonderful. I enjoyed it immensely.
Yes.
And then it went away.
Yes.
And then we rescheduled.
Yes.
That was supposed to be on last Thursday night.
Yes.
And I fell asleep.
It was my fault.
And completely missed the rescheduled interview.
That's okay.
And I want to apologize for that again, especially want to do it on the air. Sorry.
No.
That was me.
Well, and in full transparency, I didn't hit the record button correctly the first time. So this is my first remote interview with a guest. So the first time was my fault. The second time was... We'll argue it's your fault, but I don't think it's your fault.
We can argue that because it's true.
We're going to flip tables on that. It's a good thing, too, because we're in a comic book store.
There are tables.
There are tables, and there's comic books on these tables. Yep. Amazing. Mike, you run a comic book store.
I do, for a very short period of time now.
That's
as
right.
We are in the process of closing down the comic book store.
And that is an unfortunate thing in our society here, these dark, dark days that you're closing it down here in Fredericksburg.
It's very sad. I am very sad. Not without any humor, I'm going through a period of mourning and feeling fragile.
Understood. I will be gentle. I did not bring my couch this time.
I will not be gentle.
Yeah, I'm glad when you're not gentle. I like it when you're not gentle. Oh. But I did not bring my couch this time. So, unfortunately, okay. I won't be able to stroke your ego or give you a massage like that.
Fantastic.
I apologize.
I appreciate the lack of couch.
Okay, good deal. Now, next time, we'll do it in my man cave. I've got two couches.
We can own... I will show up there.
Okay.
Into your man cave.
Yes.
On one of the couches.
Okay.
Only if we're watching hockey.
Funny you mention that, because I was watching Anthony Bourdain last night.
That's not hockey.
No, but he was doing a show.
Although he'd be amazing if we could get him on the ice.
He was doing a show about Quebec.
Uh-huh.
And about the food scene in Quebec, Montreal, and Quebec City.
Right.
And everybody was playing hockey. And immediately I thought about you when we were supposed to do the interview. I'm like watching this going, Mike would love this. I wish I had this on while I was interviewing Mike.
It is the fifth season, season.
It is the fifth season. Well, usually there's four seasons in a year, isn't there?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's the fifth. Hockey is the fifth season.
Well, it's the only season that I care about. I mean, there we go. So, let's talk brass tacks here. Let's talk some brass tacks here.
Okay. What does that mean? Why do people say that?
Brass tacks?
Yeah. Why is that like a bar for we're going to talk about...
As opposed to silver tacks?
Or anything. Like, let's talk truth. Or let's talk... Why is it brass tacks? Where does that saying come from?
You know what? We're going to explore that in the show notes. I will find out the origin for brass tacks for you. I think it has something to do with when people wanted to talk brass tacks, they sat down in a chair and the upholstery was held together by brass tacks because they were so ornamental and they were so resilient.
See, now in my head, the origin is like it's a cork board.
Okay.
And you have the important things put up on the cork board and held in place with brass tacks. So let's talk brass tacks. And I'm pointing off at a wall, which you can't see because this is a podcast.
Oh, but you know what? I can take pictures and put it in the show notes and we can look at that wall. And you pointing at it. It's not an issue. Done and done.
Fantastic.
Just because we're doing audio doesn't mean we can't add pictures to it.
No. It absolutely means that. I won't be a part of anything that has pictures.
That's why he runs a comic book store, folks. This is when I come in every month. This is the kind of banter that I have every month with this fine, fine gentleman. And sometimes we talk comic books. Often we don't.
It's true.
Often we don't talk comic books. So, Mike, you've listened to the show. You know what we talk about here. We talk about creating more than we consume. Not consuming more than create, but creating more than we consume.
Right.
And I'm going to get him lunch too, folks. You get free lunch when you interview with me.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to that.
If you sit and talk with me. Now, if you're doing it over Skype, you get nothing. Nothing. You get nothing.
You just get to watch Tim eat donuts.
And it's a beautiful thing. Me eating donuts.
Are you going to bring me poutine?
Yes, I will bring you poutine. I will make it myself. I will go to Chicago and bring you poutine.
You don't get real poutine in Chicago. When you came to me and you said, hey, I want to interview you for this podcast, I said, no, there's absolutely no point because I'm not an artist. And and you kept insisting that I was, and I keep insisting that I'm not. Mm-hmm. So I said I would do this podcast, but only sort of as a hostile witness that I'm not actually, I'm doing it under protest that I am a purveyor of art in the sense that I sell comics.
Mm-hmm.
But and I try to produce art in terms of writing, but I don't feel like I've reached that level of being able to call myself an artist or a writer or anything of that sort.
And that's a fair, I don't want to say a fair estimation. That's a fair assessment of you, and your, and how you define yourself and all that good stuff. That's fair, but I'm still going to call you an artist because I think you're an artist. I think what you do has artistic merit.
I'm okay with you being wrong.
Most people are. And then when they fear, when they come around and realize that I'm actually right and they're wrong, and that they should sit on my couch and listen to what I tell them and pay me ungodly amounts of money, they feel better.
Is that like a secondary business of yours? Do you actually do psychiatric?
I do subliminal psychiatric counseling. Yeah.
Fantastic.
You've been coming to me for years. You don't even know about it.
I don't even remember because you remove it.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. I keep you going. You stop by every third Thursday.
Cool.
No, today's Friday. Sorry. I was going to say, you got an appointment next week, at 3 a.m. So use the side door, not the front door. Okay.
I won't remember that.
Exactly. You won't consciously remember it, but I've already put it in your subconscious. You'll remember.
Excellent.
So Mike here says he's a purveyor of art. He sells art. Let's talk about the art that you do sell. You sell comic books.
I do.
You sell collectibles.
I do.
I remember I was asking you, tell me about how you got into comics. What was the first comic that you purchased?
Right.
Procured.
Right.
Put in your pocket.
Yes. There was some level of larceny as a child that I think all children kind of go through.
Sure.
This is going to be so incredibly awkward.
Right.
Just the getting up and going.
The beautiful thing of it, though, is that it's editable.
Right, sure. But, but it's going to like screw up the flow of your podcast, right?
No, not at all.
Okay.
There's a special thing on the... I was just looking at it on Audacity, which is what I use to do my post-production on.
Right.
They have a thing where you can... it'll cut out all the silences. So, like, you'll have a little bit of talking. Let's say, like a 10-minute thing of silence. And then you'll have more talking. You can set it up so it'll cut... You don't even have to go in the thing. You'll just automatically find those silences that are over, like, 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds and cut it out. So, it'll sound like chipmunks talking. And and it's just like, I was testing that out on something. I was like, oh my God, this is...
That's cool.
You know, if I was that, techie, geeky about it, I'd be like, oh, yeah, I want that. But I'm not, because I prefer, nice, long rolls and, holding all your words and da-da-da-da and all that kind of good stuff. So, cool.
So where were we?
That's a good question. Where were we 45 minutes ago?
Sorry.
No. Hey, no. This is perfect, because I'm glad we are doing it this way, live in the store versus doing it over the Skype, because I just feel it's more authentic and all that kind of jazz. And I thought we had a better time when we did it.
Cool. Well, it's just a great time because, it's you and it's me, and we've got a good chemistry, so.
Absolutely. You and me and you. Da, 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 da,
yeah, I'm not singing.
That's all right, so folks, he's an artist, but he doesn't sing. So there we go. So,
and I'm also not an artist.
He's an artist. By the end of this podcast, I'm going to have you admit to me that you're an artist.
I'm just going to do it right now just to get it out of the way and completely spoil the...
That's fine. Are you an artist?
I am such an artist. That I am is. I'm the best artist in the world.
You're better than Warhol and all that kind of
stuff. I am so much better than Warhol. I can paint better than Warhol because he's dead.
That's
so
true.
He's not creating anymore.
He hasn't created anything for a long time.
Yeah, what's he doing now?
He's
bomb.
Pushing up daisies. That's what he's doing. That's what he should have been doing a long time ago. But I wasn't here for that. So that's, kind of my fault. So we were
Do you think artists are only as good as the last thing they created?
No. The last thing that they created... when you say the last thing they created, are you talking... It's the last thing they created because they died?
No. I mean, a living person.
Artist.
Let's say a painter, just because painting is easy to contextualize for this.
Sure.
So a painter creates 15 canvases.
Right.
Finishes the 16th canvas.
Yeah.
Do you judge their work, do you judge them as an artist based on that 16th canvas? Because in theory, it's they've had 15 canvases working to perfect towards the 16th canvas. Or do you judge them by what you liked out of that those 15?
I think you have to look at the entire body of work. And now, out of those 16 canvases, all right, so let's say the first five are realistic. The next five are abstract expressionism. The next five are cubism. You know, so you really can't, you know, it's hard to, when you say judge, I think it's important to look through the whole thing and see the evolution.
Right.
To appreciate the evolution. But as far as judge, that's kind of a loaded word. And that's something that I like to get away from because it intimidates a lot of people. Because when you say, hey, I'm an artist, then people are like, well, how good are you? Are you getting paid? Then you're not a good artist. Then you're not an artist because you're not getting paid.
Well, I would agree sort of in that sense of you're not a professional artist. You can be an artist without getting paid.
Yeah.
But if you're a professional, then you're getting paid for your work. That's what the word professional means, right? I mean, you're making a living doing your craft.
Well, I would agree with you. Yes, that you're being paid for your work, whether that be 2 cents or $2 billion.
Yeah,
You're getting paid for your work, so hence you're a professional. But I think it's not only monetarily you're a professional, but let's say you're mentoring people as an artist. I think you're a professional. Yeah, I think you can consider yourself a professional artist that way, or you're critiquing somebody, or you're instructing somebody, and it may not be for pay.
I think that you can have professional artists, but there are no amateur artists. I think that
you. So maybe it's
you're just an artist
or professional artist,
right?
Okay.
Right, because the amateur is kind of derogatory in that sense. If you're going to put it up against professional, I'm a professional, you're just an amateur.
Mm-hmm.
That's a derogatory sort of power structure.
Yeah.
But I don't think there are any amateur artists. You're creating and you're an artist, mm-hmm. and then you on your own journey are going to create better if you continue to create. So you grow as an artist.
Right.
But until you're getting paid or until you're teaching art mm-hmm. or your, like you said, mentoring or then you're not really, you're not a professional artist
right.
unless art is in fact your profession. That's what the.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with you on that. We're going to go with that. I like that. I hadn't thought about going down that path, but that's a great path to go.
Fantastic.
Good. That's a nice little segue. Speaking about art, comic books. You got into comic books a long time ago.
I did.
So let's talk about that. What was your first comic? What got you into comics?
The first comic that I actually bought with my own money.
Yes.
Was,
you actually bought this, folks. Bought it.
Was Uncanny X-Men number 143.
Okay.
I think it's number 143. It might have been 144. It's the issue where Kitty Pryde is alone at Christmas because she's Jewish, and everyone's left the X-Mansion, and this alien-esque creature breaks in, and she has to fight it by herself.
Okay.
And she's like a 13-year-old girl at that point. And it was a really cool, really tense, dangerous-feeling comic.
Mm-hmm.
So I dug it. And then I couldn't wait for the next issue, which had absolutely nothing to do with that issue. So it was kind of, oh...
Gotcha. So they, it's kind of like a one-off that they did, and they got you with a one-off, and
and
years later, you're still into comics.
Right. Well, my dream wasn't to own a comic book store.
No.
I mean, I get a lot of people come into the store and like, oh, you've got my dream job. This is what I absolutely want to be doing. This is, mm-hmm. I would love to own a comic book store. My dream job was writing comics. I desperately wanted to create comics.
Sure.
But I have no drawing artistic talent. I have zero. I get excited if my stick man's head forms a complete circle. That is the extent of my artistic talent. But since comics are a visual medium, and I grew up in rural Ontario, Canada, there wasn't really any in for me to get into this profession. There wasn't a way for me to, I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't break in. I didn't have friends that were artistically inclined that wanted to invest themselves in doing comics. Sure. until university, that things changed. But I could never find a way to actually make it my profession. And so I figured if I'm not going to be writing the comics, if I'm not going to be creating them, I'll sell them. At least that way I'm tangentially attached to the dream that I had of being a comic book writer. I'm still part of the industry, sure. Even if it's only sort of sideways.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, at least you got your foot in it. You got your hand in it. You're
right. I'm surrounded by comics, and I'm getting to read all of the comics, which is crazy cool. I mean, with the store closing, I'm not sure how I'm going to get a comic book fixed, because for 12 years I've gotten to read every single comic that every single company has put out. That's a lot of comics.
I'm just looking around here at all the tables and going, Jesus Christ. And I bet you there's stuff out there that you don't see, that you don't carry, that you would love to.
Yeah, there's we always talk these manga, the Japanese comics. We have a very small selection in the store because that brand is so huge. There's basically a manga for any sort of story that you can possibly imagine, well beyond the scope of most Western comics. Like if you want a comic about hockey, there's a comic about hockey. There's ballet comics. There's alien comics. There's aliens teaching classes in a school comics. It's just bizarre, the extent of what's available in manga.
And just in manga, that's mind blowing. And yeah, I've seen your collection here. It's tiny, but I'm familiar with it because I used to collect it a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And it's just like, wow.
Yeah, we used to talk if we were going to open up another store, it was going to be just manga. It was going to be a store dedicated to all things Asian culture and the Asian comic book market.
Sure. Excellent. Well, let's get back on the writing aspect of it. You enjoy writing.
I do.
Definitely enjoy writing on that. And how do you approach that? How do you approach the writing aspect of it? Okay, so you can't, you're not an illustrator. Got it. Done. But you're a writer. What does that writing do for you?
Okay, so
how does that feed your soul?
For comic books specifically, or
we'll start with comic books. Yeah.
Okay, so what I do, and I know the practice writing comic book scripts.
Sure.
How you do the panel breakdowns, figuring out describe each panel and just the written portion of it. I do that occasionally. It's someone asked me, well, what's the one story, if you could do it, what story do you want to tell? And I was like, okay, I really want to tell Alfred Pennyworth Year One. How does this guy become the Wayne's butler? Why?
Sure.
Who is he? Why is he looking after Bruce? I wrote that story out in a 4-issue arc of Alfred Pennyworth Year One, SAS trained spy guy, set in the early 1970s, saying who he is and how he meets Thomas Wayne for the first time and how that relationship forms.
Nice.
Why is this ex-spy, because it's established that Alfred's former British MI5, MI6 agent. Why is he now butlering for this billionaire in the United States?
Right.
Well, there's got to be a story there, and nobody's told that story, and I would love to tell that story.
Okay. So, and Why do you want to tell that story? What drives you to want to tell that story?
It's a story that I've figured out that I think, to toot my own horn just briefly.
Please do.
I think that there's a phone.
There's a phone. And he's going to answer that phone, folks. And we'll be back right after these messages. Do you have halitosis? We can cure that for you. So, our halitosis... Not halitosis commercial. No.
Okay.
So, the Alfred story. Alfred Irwin
right.
story. Yeah.
So, the reason that I think I can tell this story...
Are you a MI6 agent that we need to know about?
Well, I'm CSIS, Canadian Secret Intelligence Service.
Okay. All right, that's what I thought. Okay. Yeah.
I'm long-term undercover spying for the Canadian government here in the States.
Very good.
I've decided to use your podcast to come out and expose the Canadian secret invasion that has been quietly going on here in the United States, mm-hmm. and warn the good people of Virginia that the Canadians are coming.
Okay, good deal. We are a little bit worried about it, and we'll discuss the whole poutine incident in a little while here, but yeah, you heard it here first, folks. Canadians are coming for Virginia. This is their first stop, and it makes sense because it's for lovers. There we go. So anyways, you, Alfred, tell me, why you?
Part of me wants to be flip and say, why not? Why not me?
Okay.
I feel like I figured out the story. It fits into continuity. Why shouldn't I get to tell this story?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that... I don't think that there's a... I don't know how to put this. I don't think there's a way of telling a canon comic book story that is particularly better than another way of telling it. Like, mm-hmm. Just because I absolutely love Ed Brubaker, I think he's one of the most amazing comic writers ever.
Sure.
That doesn't mean that he should get to tell my stories.
Right.
I think that we all have a voice, mm-hmm. and while for the last 12 years I've been selling comics, and many years before that I've had the dream of writing comics, with owning this comic book store, my sense of how comics work and what works with the audience,
mm-hmm.
I think is possibly sharper than a lot of people that are actually in the industry, because people come into the store and they say, oh, I hated this story. Why are they making this story? Nobody asked for this story.
Mm-hmm.
And I take that in. But I don't get the sense that Marvel or DC or any of the other companies actually hear that. They just mm-hmm. produce what they produce.
Sure.
And regardless of whether or not their audience is really wanting that, they're just making what they want to make.
Okay.
And I think that there's a disconnect between mainstream comics, specifically superhero comics, and the stories that they're choosing to tell, and what the people that are buying comics actually want to read.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. And we were talking about this a while back with the, you know, the Marvel and the DC there in their ivory tower. And the people that are sitting here buying the stuff don't have that intermediary, or they try to have the best intermediary they have is somebody like yourself that sells the comic books. But, you know, DC is not going to come down here to Fredericksburg and go, so, Mike, what's the word on the street?
Right. And I think that I would want them to hire me.
Sure.
But they should hire some comic book retailer, mm-hmm. and get them up into the editorial process and or the brainstorming process, however they do the summits where they get all of the writers together and brainstorm what stories and story arcs they're going to do for the next year. Mm-hmm. They really should get some comic book retailers in there to ground those stories and say, look, people don't want that.
No.
Or there are communities of readers that are underserved by the comic book industry.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the problem is they rely far too heavily on comic book stores to put those comics into those readers' hands.
Sure.
Which we try. Yeah. If they come into the store, I will sell it to them. I will sell the heck out of it to them.
Yes, you will.
And they will buy and come back and buy more. But I'm only one store, and I can mm-hmm. only deal with the people that come through my door.
Right.
Marvel is a multi-billion-dollar company.
Yep.
Now attached to Disney, which is a multi-trillion-dollar company.
Bingo.
So if they actually wanted to market to the Latino populace, mm-hmm. they have a lot better ability to do that than I do.
Yeah.
And they don't.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they do.
Can swear in this podcast, by the way.
Right.
Do is acceptable.
Right. Do will be my go-to swear for the remainder of this podcast.
Excellent.
What they do is they put out a comic that is sort of aimed partially at that market.
Sure.
But then they don't do anything with it. They don't advertise it in ways that people who would be interested in that comic know that the comic exists.
Mm-hmm.
So when that comic fails and hits the cancellation threshold, they go, well, look, there's no market for these things. We tried. We put out that comic that featured a heavy person of color supporting cast and main hero, but it didn't sell. So we put it out there. People just weren't interested in buying it. Well, the interest is there.
Yeah.
You're just not helping me market it. If you're relying on just the comic book retailer talking to the people who come into the store to sell to a closed community,
mm-hmm.
it's going to fail. It's going to fail on the outset just because that community doesn't necessarily come into my store
right.
in order to see that the comic exists.
Exactly. And the people that do come into your store aren't necessarily going to go out to that community and go, oh, hey, did you know that there is this, you know, comic book? And we'll take the Latino market, for instance. You know, someone like myself who's, you know, Caucasian, I'm not necessarily going to go walk in your store, see, oh, hey, there's a Latino comic book there, pick it up, and then go talk to my buddy, you know, down the street and go, hey, listen, there's this
right.
you know, copy, and here it is for you. I'm not going to do that. It's not because I don't like the guy down the street from me. It's just that Marvel could market to the guy down the street.
Right. And his entire community or her entire community.
Absolutely.
Their entire community being completely inclusive. There is still a very strong bias against women being portrayed in comics and marketing to young girl readers.
Mm-hmm.
They make up 51% of the population. I yeah. think that you should be marketing to
but
them.
Mike,
to
you got My Little Pony. Mike, you've got Harlequin. You've got Catwoman.
I do have those.
Those are all women.
They are.
How they're marketed.
The problem is that we get stuck into this dynamic of thinking of boy comics and girl comics
yeah.
instead of just good comics.
Mm-hmm.
Because about 40% of our clientele are women or mm-hmm. young girls. And they're not buying just girl comics. They're mm-hmm. just buying comics. They're as big a Batman fans, as big as Superman fans, they know people who know more about Spider-Man than me come in, and we have amazing conversations. And part of that is just having conversations with them about the thing that we have in common, which is loving comics.
Excellent.
And once you start talking to somebody and you find out what they like, you can put things into their hands that is going to push them into, oh, you like this? Well, you're going to like this then. You should pick up this. Mm-hmm. And that's how you expand your clientele.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, folks, if you're thinking about, working for Marvel or DC, or if Marvel and DC is looking at us and listening to us, which they should be, Lord knows I've been following them on the Twitter and the Facebook. Take note of that. Get on down to your comic book stores and knock that out for yourself. Mike, let's talk a little bit about where you think things are going in terms of your artistic endeavors. Where would you like to go?
Where would I like to go?
I mean, we already know you want to do the Alfred Year One thing.
Right, and for comic books.
And so outside of comic books, where would you like to go? What would you like to do?
That is opening up for me rather rapidly. As the store is closing...
When you grow up, what do you want to be?
Right. I'm going to take a month off and just mourn the store. I know mourn sounds stupid, but
no.
I've spent 12 years running this store, and I love this store. So figuring out how to fill my time without the store, and I think just sitting on the couch and eating Cheetos and watching TV and getting caught up with all of that sort of stuff, I'm going to do that. And then after a month, I'm going to pick myself up, dust off the Cheeto dust off of my shirt, and focus on trying to finish one of the two novels that I feel like I have in me that I think are really good. And see if I'm capable of doing that. And if I'm not, it's time to move on from considering myself a writer and see what I actually am.
Okay. So you're in a state of transformation?
Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. Being in transformation it can be a scary thing.
It is certainly not a comfortable thing.
No. And you are more than welcome to, for that month, if you want to sit in my couch in my man cave, by all means. I have... three hockey stations that you can watch. I've got Netflix. I've got, Amazon Video.
Cool.
Knock it out. Have fun with that.
Siege, my wife, got me the advanced Christmas gift of On Ice for a TV. So
there you go, yeah.
There's at least four hockey games any given night that I can cycle through.
Perfect. And hopefully a few of them are Canadian teams.
Shut up.
It's hard because they just did the expansion with Las Vegas, another American team.
Las Vegas.
And they're doing good. They're doing good. That's for an expansion team.
Sure.
They're doing good.
Yeah, you put enough money into anything, it's going to look good at first. Let's see how they do in the long run, if they're actually going to be a team or if they're just a bought novelty.
We'll yeah, like the Carolina Hurricanes, they're a bought team. They were bought a long time ago. All right. So, let's go to, we do the questions.
Right. I'm familiar with this.
The Satanic Seven Questions, which you have decided that you would like to name something different.
Right. I suggested the Solstice Seven.
The Solstice Seven, yes.
Because I'm not so much into the satanic stuff.
Right.
I appreciate all of the weird devil iconography you have all over your body, and that you are quite possibly a deeply disturbed satanic person. But
I'm not disturbed at all. Everyone gives me crap about this voice. It's because if I had surgery and they put my vocal cords around my knee.
Yeah, no, okay. It has nothing to do with devil worship.
No. Oh. And all the skulls and devils and all that tattooed all over my body. And just because I smell like,
brimstone?
Yeah, I sacrificed a couple of thousand virgins. Nothing. Nah, no Satanism here.
Okay.
None whatsoever. All right. So we're going to do our solstice 7.
Right. Now, why is it 7? Why 7 questions?
Why 7 questions? That way, there's no tie. You can't get 3 right, 3 wrong. There's a winner, there's a loser.
Right. So
much as in life.
How about you just, like, you could do, like, 9 questions instead.
Well, I'll tell you what.
If you're into the what's it called when words sound the same? The alliteration.
Yes.
Of Satanic 7. Mm. You can come up with something for a 9, because...
Like the Naughty 9?
Like Naughty 9.
Naughty
Almost
9.
Like we just came up with that right off the top of our head.
You know, like 2 days ago, and we was thinking.
We didn't do this in the first interview.
The first 2-hour interview.
That has gone away. Did that sound completely natural, like it was flowing?
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
And if not, I'll edit the crap out of it. Absolutely. All right. So, the Solstice 7. Now, just to remind everyone, we did have a perfect score way back in episode number 4 with Ashley, my tattoo artist, who is not a Satanist but loves to draw skulls on me for some reason, because I pay her a lot of money to do that.
Right.
So
I'm upset.
Yes.
I want to register my complaint, because
yes.
The first time we did this interview,
yes.
We sat for 2 hours, did prime content, amazing content for
yes,
this
we
interview.
Did.
We made it through the Solstice 7.
Yeah.
I scored really well on the Solstice 7.
Yes.
Now we're doing it again. I've got no guarantee that I'm going to hit the same mark that I hit the first time through.
All right.
I feel like now I'm going to have done like 14 of them.
Well, here's what we'll do. Just for transparency's sake, I will let everyone know that Mike did get more than perfect.
Okay? 7.5 out of 7.
7.5 out of 8.
Well, we ended up doing 8.
We did 8 questions.
Right.
We didn't get to the 9.
No.
But you did get 7.5 out of it. So you did get more than perfect.
Right.
So Mike did score more than perfect. So I would ask you, for the benefit, the worst you'll score is 7.5.
Fantastic.
I will guarantee you the worst you will score is a 7.5.
Okay, well, then I can, like, half-ass these questions.
You might even do better. You might even do better.
You've taken away my incentive to answer these questions
in a
deep and meaningful way.
So,
I already know I've got 7.5 out of 7.
You already are better than perfect. I'm going to call upon your innate... Guatemalan-ness.
My sense of integrity.
Your sense of integrity. Fantastic. That's why we have guests on these shows, because I can't think of all the words, but you can. So that way we're going to say that, you know, hey, we're going to do your integrity on that and say you're going to try to answer these to the best of your ability.
Yeah, let's say that. Like it's
we'll say that.
We'll say that.
I wrote down your answers. So
I don't remember my answers.
Fine. I do. Are you ready?
Am I ready?
For the Solstice 7 / Naughty 9
questions.
Naughty 9. The
Naughty 9. Oh, fantastic.
Grenades. We're two Canadians with Scottish accents.
Exactly.
That's a new podcast that will be debuting next year here on KDOI Podcasting.
Just called Two Canadians.
Two Canadians dressed as, speaking as Scots, dressed as Australians.
Fantastic.
There we go.
Great new day, eh, mate?
I have no idea what the hell you just said. I feel personally offended. All right. So I score these questions.
Right.
Because I'm getting this wonderful Twitter feed from everybody here
yeah.
that's listening to the questions.
Right.
So here we go, Mike. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right.
Now, you'll know if my answer has changed from the last time. Am I getting
that's
the same
correct.
Questions or am I getting different questions?
You're getting the same questions.
Oh, okay.
I'm making it easy on you.
Fantastic.
All right. So... the first question we ask you is, what is the question you are always asked that you dislike, and why do you hate it?
Right. And what was my answer?
I'm not going to tell you. I have it recorded somewhere, very secret, in a bunker.
It says, let's see.
It says you got it right.
There's also a line written next to it, but I'm not, what does it say?
What question do you hate?
Oh.
That's what I wrote down.
Drat!
Oh.
Well, right now,
the question that you are getting asked right now that you hate and why.
Right. The question that I'm getting asked a lot right now is, why is the store closing?
Ah, that's right. Yes.
And I hate that because it makes me have to talk and think about the store closing, which is still really painful. And I want to say, none of your business. Mm-hmm. You know, we're closing. I appreciate that. One of the amazing things about this store is that it fosters a sense of community and loyalty. And, you know, comic book people like their comic book, the person that, like, provides them their fix.
Yes.
And they can be very incredibly loyal, and I desperately appreciate that. I've met so many really cool people through the store, so I can understand why, like, if you ask me, hey, why is the store closing? I'm thinking of it as a friend asking me why the store is closing.
Right.
And I don't mind having that conversation. And I've met a lot of really cool people that way, so I don't mind that conversation. Mm-hmm. But when it's just somebody in that, you know, I don't really want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I have to talk about it because I'm still a retailer person and I still want them to buy things. So I can't say, none of your business, screw off.
I think you need to maintain the attitude of old man store owner Mike and go, right, get off my lawn. Get your shit and get the hell out.
Right.
There you go.
I had another question. See, this is why it's going to be so difficult because now I'm measuring myself against my previous answers. And, sir, I have to admit, right now I feel like I didn't answer that question correctly, and I wouldn't get the check mark beside it. I know I came up with another question that I get asked a lot.
Yeah.
And that I hate.
Oh, boy and girl comics. Is this from
This is where we talked about the gentrification
yes,
of comic books, yeah, and how I hate that, where parents will sometimes come in with their kids. And let's say it's a young boy, 5 or 6 years old, and he will pick up a My Little Pony comic, and the parent will look at me and say, is that appropriate for a boy? And be like, yes, it is.
I have the whole collection right here.
And just the idea that there are gendered comics. Mm. Now, there are comics that different people like more than other comics.
Sure.
Different communities like more than other comics.
Mm-hmm.
Some comics that are problematic for different communities.
Mm-hmm.
But to say one is a boy comic and one is a girl comic, no, they're either good comics or bad comics. They're well written or poorly written.
Absolutely.
And it's all about the story and what resonates for you, not what somebody else thinks you should like because they have an image of who you are.
Exactly.
So that's just a crazy pet peeve of that happens at least once a week where somebody will come in and say, I'm shopping for my 8-year-old boy. What comic's good for him? I'm shopping for my 7-year-old daughter. What comic's good for her?
They're all good for her.
It'd be like, here's Spider-Man. Yeah. Why wouldn't she like Spider-Man? Spider-Man's amazing.
Yeah. It has it in the title, The Amazing Spider-Man.
Exactly. Can it also be spectacular or sometimes coming from a friendly neighborhood?
Uncanny, perhaps, I would say.
Of the X-Men
type,
I don't think there's
yes,
an uncanny Spider-Man type.
No, I think there was.
I don't think so.
Uncanny Spider-Man?
No, I'm pretty sure.
Didn't he team up with the Uncanny X-Men and was Uncanny Spider-Man?
No.
Oh. I'm thinking of somebody else then.
There is an Uncanny Avengers comic.
That's what I was thinking of. Uncanny Avengers. Okay. Uncanny. And vengeful. There we go.
Done.
Excellent. So you got the mark.
I found my way back.
You made it happen.
This is going to be the challenge for your reader, your challenge for your listener, which is one of them. Challenge for your listeners.
Yes. Multiple.
multiple listeners.
It's you, my mom, who's been dead since 2002.
That still listens.
But still listens.
Regularly.
Every other week.
Right.
Because she's on the Twitter, too.
Right.
All right. Question number two.
Yes.
Why art? Why art?
Why art?
Why art?
I don't understand why Paul Simon dropped him either. I miss Art Garfunkel.
Yeah, who doesn't? He's a great painter. Nobody.
It's Simon and Garfunkel, darn it.
Fingers and do a tambourine like Art Garfunkel.
Darn it. Why, Art? Why? Why did you go away?
Is that your answer?
No.
I was going to say, I'll snatch that point back.
You can't. We've already agreed that I got 7.5 out of 7. It's on tape.
I could easily lose this tape and edit that crap out. All right.
Okay, art. Why art?
Yeah, why art? Why do art? What's it do for you?
Right.
What's it to you, pal?
What's it to me?
What's it to you?
No, what's it to anybody? I mean, that's, I mean, art feeds a part of us that isn't satisfied by the regular day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
We get, to be corny for a moment, I think we get nurtured by art. That art, when we see good art,
mm-hmm.
good being what I like and bad being what I don't like.
There you go.
So if I see something that I like that inspires me,
mm-hmm.
it moves me to do better in my own endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
When I see something that I absolutely hate,
mm-hmm.
it still informs me.
Okay.
It's still creative, and you can be moved creatively as strongly, if not more strongly, by something that you find detestable.
True.
So as a response,
mm-hmm.
Why art? I mean, again, why not? Why wouldn't you want to create something? Why wouldn't you want to express yourself
right.
in some creative way
mm-hmm.
to share? Because that's what, I mean, art is an experiential thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
it, for the creator, it's almost an exorcism. You just got this and you... onto the page or onto the canvas, and
mm-hmm.
you can deal with things or express. It's not necessarily bad or the negative emotional sorts of things, but you can pure expressions of joy
sure.
and try to share that with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's so that when they see that canvas, when they read that short story, when they are in the audience, when you're performing a poem, they are connected with mm-hmm. that feeling. That's the amazing thing about art, that it can inspire emotion and inspire you to explore your own emotions.
Perfect. You got your points.
Yeah.
You got your points. And as he does that with the lightsabers, and he has shaved my head on that, can art be defined? Should art be defined?
Right. Yeah, I don't think that you can say that art can't be defined.
Mm-hmm.
Should it be? I want to say probably not. Not as an experience. I think that we need to define it when we want to talk about it, when we want to critique it, when we want to try to find meaning and share that meaning with somebody else in a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We use concepts. Language is a conceptual thing. We use symbolic words to share something that's beyond that. Like
mm-hmm.
when we say love isn't just the word. Love is a whole concept
mm-hmm.
that we have an understanding of what we mean when we say the word love. So art, I think, and the experience is non-conceptual. When
okay.
you see a painting, it evokes a feeling in you, And that's a deeply personal thing. You experience that feeling. Mm-hmm. You imagine the story. You create stories around the painting. You, what have you. When you try to then turn to the person that's at the gallery with you and say, wow, I think blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Then you're now conceptualizing that experience. You're trying to share that experience, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. goes beyond words into words. And the only way to have that conversation is to make those boxes that we want to put things into. Does that answer the question?
That answers the question.
Should we? I think we should if we want to talk about the experience with somebody else. But if it's just you sitting, writing a poem, if it's just you and your paints, if it's just you in front of the mirror practicing katas, then no, you don't need to classify mm-hmm. what you're doing. It's just when you want to share it with somebody else, you need to classify it in order for it to have meaning for that person.
Okay. Absolutely. You got your points. All right. Here's the tough one.
Right.
This is one you almost didn't get. All right. So, what is the worst piece of advice that you followed, and what was the result?
Right. Now, they're not going to know if I change my answer.
No.
You'll know.
I'll know.
But, I don't like this question. This question is hard because, I've gotten a lot of advice.
Yep.
And so, in theory, you can say, well, what's the worst piece of advice? And just go down the list and say, that's the worst thing that I've ever been told. But bad advice, man, I don't know if I...
Are you a person that goes out and seeks advice?
Not generally. Okay. We sought advice when we were thinking about opening this store.
Sure.
And some of it was good advice and some of it was bad advice. Mm-hmm. That some of it I wish we'd listened to closer. And mm-hmm. like holding customers who have pull boxes tighter towards getting schedules for them to come in and pick up books and not being as mm-hmm. laissez-faire about them picking up books.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we'd been tighter on that. And we'd been warned about that by somebody, and I chose not to follow that advice, and it was something that became an issue in the store of people not coming in regularly and picking up things that I'd ordered for them, so mm-hmm. product was just sitting in the store, weren't making money on it, and that was hard. We were also told that we shouldn't do backstock, but mm-hmm. backstock turned out to be one of our best sellers. So the idea that advice only becomes good or bad from the result, right? If somebody gives you advice, it's not bad advice mm-hmm. necessarily. It's just advice. And then if you follow it and something bad happens,
then it
becomes bad advice.
Right.
Like there isn't a metric for just stop talking to me, that whatever you just told me is horrible and I'm not going to listen to you anymore.
I gotcha.
So I think what I mentioned the first time around was about university relationships.
Yes.
And romance and mm. somebody saying, hey, you guys would be really good together, and following that and discovering just how not good together we actually were.
Yep.
And how painful and not good for either of us the being in that relationship was.
Bingo.
And I think that's still, I mean, if 20 years later you can look back at a university relationship and go, wow, that really messed me up, then it's probably something that yeah. remains bad. I should not have listened to that person.
Hopefully that person is long gone.
Yeah, I'm sure that they're still around.
We'll dig them up. Literally, we'll dig them. If they're not alive, we'll dig them up. Okay. And now we're going to go with question number five.
Are we on five?
We are on five. We did four.
Have we?
Yes, we did four. Because four was
number four?
Worst piece of advice you followed.
Oh, okay.
Now this one is let's say you throw yourself at the ground and you miss.
Right.
What are you doing and how do you continue to keep on doing this seemingly impossible task?
Right.
Throwing yourself at the ground and missing. Go.
You're flying.
Really?
Because Douglas Adams said so.
You're flying because Douglas Adams said so.
Exactly. And the only way to keep on flying is to not think about the ground.
All right. And this is where I gave you the half a point, mm-hmm. if you remember correctly. No. No. I didn't give you the half point this one. Okay. You're right. Yes, you are flying. And
then the last time, and this is, I am so sorry for your audience because they're not getting a podcast with me. They're getting a synopsis of a previous podcast with me.
Yes.
Because we had an amazing discussion about Douglas Adams and his brand of humor and the radio play versus the BBC TV show versus the movie. Yeah. All of those things, which you are going to hear none of, listening audience.
None of it. Damn you all to hell. You should have been here in the comic book store with us when we did it. You were invited. I don't know what happened to the invites to the memos, but you didn't pick up on it. You missed out.
They were in the basement, protected behind a sign that said, "Beware the leopard."
There you go. In a disused lavatory. Disused. Good job. Plus, you know, throwing yourself to the ground and missing is also the title of my first book of poetry.
Huh.
Yes. I owe you a copy. I need to get you signed copies of some poetry.
Wow. So, wait a minute. You do poetry?
Yes, I do poetry.
That's amazing.
I do slam poetry. I do written academic kind of poetry. I do a lot of things.
You have books of poetry.
I have.
Not just one book.
I have five.
Books.
Books. And with the S, right. As in multiple. Yes. Throwing Myself to the Ground and Missing is my first book of poetry back in 2006. Yeah, 2006, 2007, something like that.
Right.
Postcards from Somebody You Don't Know is my next one. Wisdom from the Sack, when I was homeless in Chicago, and Shaving Crop Circles in My Chest Hair is my latest.
That's four.
Four. And then
you have five.
I have five. Two Princesses, which is a bedtime story for my twin girls.
Awesome.
Yep.
And wait to work a plug-in for your stuff on your own podcast.
That is fantastic.
Pantsless Monday, you were just sharing that with me?
Yes, Pantsless Monday. We were just sharing that after you answered the fifth question of if you're throwing yourself to the ground and flying, are you doing? Well, you're throwing yourself to the ground and miss, you're flying. So I was explaining Pantsless Monday because it's been a while since I've been at work, and on Monday I don't wear pants because I sit around my house.
It's like the exact opposite of the casual Friday. It's like, please, Tim, either wear pants or stay home.
Exactly.
And you got to stay home.
And I stay home.
Right. And you don't wear pants.
I don't wear pants at home on Monday. All day Monday, don't wear pants.
This is going to be a crazy interview.
Oh, it's going to be
so bizarre.
By far my best interview. All right.
I think that's way too high of a bar because, like I said, your first podcast was amazing.
With Nelson.
Yeah.
Yeah, episode number two. That was a great interview.
Yeah.
Your
first one was you talking about yourself. Yeah, that was okay.
That was okay.
But the interview with Nelson was really interesting and really cool.
You know, he's a very dynamic person. He's out there. He does consider himself an artist. Mm-hmm. I wish you considered yourself an artist.
Well, define your term. What do you mean an artist?
Yeah, somebody that does something that is creative. And it doesn't have to be with intention. I think we're all artists.
Oh well, then the term is meaningless, isn't it? If everybody's an artist, there's no point in saying artist.
I think everyone is an artist.
Might as well just say, "Hey, Tim."
But I think it's important that we call somebody an artist and recognize that they do something that's out of the ordinary. You know, instead of I'm waking up and brushing my teeth, I'm going to work. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. How is that person an artist? That person an artist because what clothes did they put on and why did they put on those clothes? Why? What made them choose to put on those clothes?
They own like 7 sets of the exact same clothes.
Okay.
And they picked up Tuesday's clothes because it's Tuesday and they put those on.
Yeah. But they had to get those 7 sets of clothes from somewhere. And for some reason they picked out, they're the same, they have a certain feel, texture, quality, cut, color to them. Fabric feeling, mouth feel, as right. lot of my friends in the
I'm going to disagree with you. I don't think everybody is an artist. And I think everybody has the potential to be an artist.
Sure.
But not everybody is an artist because art takes intent. Okay. I don't think either intent by the creator or intent by the audience. If the creator is accidental, the creation is accidental. You either, as an artist, create something purposefully that is creative.
Yeah, right.
Or you do something and somebody else looks upon that as a creative endeavor and ascribes meaning to it.
Okay.
And then that turns something that you didn't intend it to be art into an artistic thing, which then makes you an artist because you have created art.
Okay, so somebody in that second experience, Joe Blow does something.
Right.
He doesn't consider himself an artist.
Right.
But somebody watched it happen, experienced it happen, and said, hey, that's artistic.
Right.
Okay, we're all artists then.
No.
Yes, because this happens all the time.
No, but it doesn't happen all the time.
Sure it does.
You don't look at somebody walking about in their day-to-day life and go, wow, that guy's really artistic. You just don't. No, you don't.
I do.
You might think that, but you don't. Because art... No! There, I'm getting angry. You wanted more anger in this? No!
He's going to flip the tables. Oh my God, somebody call the cops.
No, I disagree so strongly.
That's okay. And I want you to disagree. I want you to disagree. I guess what I don't want to have happen is for people to be intimidated by art. By the word art, by the idea of art. And I see a lot of people are intimidated by it, and they don't want to try it because they put the judgments on it. They self-impose it. They feel that they have to self-impose it.
Sure. Part of the issue, I think, is the expectation of greatness.
Mm-hmm.
When you say, I'm an artist,
right.
It puts you at a certain level of creation, of creativeness in the sort of zeitgeist mindset of the average person.
And right.
If you're sitting at home and you're writing letters to somebody,
mm-hmm.
you're not thinking about that letter as a piece of art. You're thinking of it as a letter to somebody. When you think of an artist and their writing,
mm-hmm.
You're thinking like Shakespeare, you're thinking Donne, you're thinking mm-hmm. Milton, you're thinking... Chinua Achebe, you're thinking Margaret Atwood, you're thinking people that are at the pinnacle of that art form.
Right.
So calling yourself an artist is putting yourself in that same level as these other people.
I think people can feel that way, and you had somebody up there. People can feel that way, but I don't want people to be intimidated because I talk to so many people that are like, hey, I'd go paint a picture, but I suck. Nobody would like it. And then they stop. And that could be the world's best picture ever painted. They just got stopped. And that's what I want to stop.
Right. When I was saying that when people think of artists, they think of the pinnacle of whatever that art platform is, mm-hmm. and then they don't compare themselves to that. They mm-hmm. don't see what they're doing as them being an artist mm-hmm. because they think of that the best person in it, and they don't compare themselves to that. Mm-hmm. The only way to get better is to keep creating.
I agree. But a lot of people stop themselves because they have some inflated idea of what it is just even start off.
Right. That's what I was saying about the expectation of greatness.
Yeah.
That they don't start because they say, oh, it's going to suck. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it probably will suck the first mm-hmm. time you do something, the first time you do anything.
Yeah.
But the modern day has taught us that there's an expectation of greatness, that if you're going to do something, you should be doing it at the pinnacle, you should be doing it at the best, mm-hmm. and if you're not, then there's no point in doing it.
Right.
Well, that's wrong. You should mm-hmm. still
you should do it to the pinnacle of your power,
and you will get better as
and
you do
get
it
better. Yeah.
But,
and your power will grow like the Green Ranger. Green Power Rangers power grows.
I'll take your word for it.
I don't do the Power Rangers.
Sorry. Me either. They were before and after my time.
And hopefully they'll live on in infamy. All right, so we're getting back to the questions here. Question
right.
number six. Do you archive your early work?
Yes.
You do?
For the longest time. I've mm-hmm. archived. I used to keep journals when I was a kid.
Right.
Writing observations, thoughts, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
My parents encouraged me to write, and so I kept like a dream journal, and I kept just sort of a daily life diary journal sort
sure.
of thing. Yes, and the reason, and I think the follow-up part of that is why not?
Yeah.
Why is because that's the only way to chart your own improvement.
Mm-hmm.
If you can feel like you're getting better at something, but if you don't have your early paintings, if you don't have your early poems, you're only comparing them to the memory of the thing that you've created before, and our memories suck.
Absolutely.
They're either conflated or deflated, depending on how we're feeling at any given moment. We might remember something being so much better than it actually was because we've idolized it,
right.
or we might remember something as being complete poop, which was actually really good
mm-hmm.
because we're feeling down. Or beyond that, in for writing especially, and that's my medium. Sometimes within something that is poop, mm-hmm. there's a germ or a phrase or a moment that is actually really good. And mm-hmm. being able to go back and extract that, go, oh, that was an amazing phrase. Oh, that was a really cool situation.
Yeah.
I can use that in this new project, assuming that it wasn't published before,
right.
and just take it whole cloth and put it into the new thing and mm-hmm. make that new thing that you're working on better. I think that's an amazing tool.
Perfect.
Plus, if you're in the mentorship idea, I think it's really important that your students see that there is a progression in your work too.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the last time we attempted this interview, what I was saying was with martial artists, mm-hmm. you want to have videotape of you doing katas. Because when you start, you can point out where all of the mistakes are that you were making when I'm supposed to be pointing out my foot here. I'm supposed to be turning my foot when I do the kick,
yeah.
that sort of thing. And show your students that you weren't perfect.
Right.
And then you can show as you progress how you have gotten better. And I think it's really important for people who are trying to learn an art form to see that how progress works,
mm-hmm.
because we're our worst critics. So we might not recognize when we've actually gotten better at something. And it takes that sort of objective actual existence of a thing to compare to the objective actual existence of another thing to convince us that, yes, I've gotten better at doing something.
True. There we go. You get that point right.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. So there's question number seven where we usually stop. but we're going to...
No, we do seven. It's the Solstice seven.
This is the Solstice seven, yes.
Now, did I just finish number seven?
Finished number six.
Okay.
This will be number seven.
Right.
But remember, we asked you eight questions.
Right, because we were going to do the naughty nine.
Right.
But we only got to eight.
We only got to eight, but that's okay, because we're at seven right now.
Right.
All right, so on...
Number seven?
This is the magic wand question. I'm waving my magic wand.
Right.
As you can see. Wave.
Right. It's magic because it is invisible and non-existent.
Well, is it non-existent?
Yes.
I don't know. So, money were no consideration, time were no consideration, resources no consideration, uh-huh. I remove all of that, wave my magic wand. What project would you do? Is your first question.
Right.
Second question, would you want that project to be the only thing that you are known by?
Gotcha. So, in this interview, I mentioned the Alfred Year One comic, which we didn't in the first interview.
Right.
So, if money was no object and being hired was no object, if I had the ability to get that done, I would love to do that project.
Okay.
But in the absence of that, in working in the comic book field, just as a writer, and because the store is closing and I'm going to have more time, part of your magic wand has worked. Thanks for making my store fail with your magic wand to give me more time to write.
It's the little things that I do for you. The little things.
Jerk.
Exactly.
I'm going to be focusing more on my writing to see if I can, in fact, finish a novel. I think that's another thing that... differentiates just a person being creative and an artist.
Mm-hmm.
I think an artist finishes projects.
Okay.
You can be creative and do things creatively, but you're not necessarily an artist unless you actually can finish those creative projects.
Okay.
For the longest time, I've considered myself a writer, and that sort of... all of that comes with it in my head, is one of the really big important parts of how I view myself.
Okay.
But the truth is that I've never finished a novel. I've started a lot of novels, but I've never actually finished one.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to either validate that belief in myself that I'm a writer, or validate the fear in myself that I am not a writer, I'm going to give myself 6 months to work on one of those stories that I've started that I think is really strong, and see if I can finish it. And not having to be in the store 80 hours a week is going to give me a lot of time to try that. I will find out one way or another whether or not I can actually finish, in which case I might become an artist over the next 6 months.
Wow. Now, is this the only work you want to be known by? If this is successful, you're good.
Well, here's the thing. I don't have a problem becoming famous for one thing.
Okay.
I don't think that limits you to then only doing that one thing. If doing one thing and becoming famous opens doors and think, oh, that's the guy that did Great God Pan. Oh, that's the guy that did, she did Harry Potter and she's known for Harry Potter and it's always going to be Harry Potter no matter what other book she ever does.
Yeah.
I'm betting that she gets to do more books because she's done Harry Potter.
Sure.
Even if she's only ever going to be famous for Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling. But
That's who did that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I hear she's famous or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So I don't think that being famous for one thing is necessarily a bad thing unless you then decide that that's all you're ever going to do.
Gotcha.
As long as you use that fame to accomplish other things, I think that by all means, make me famous.
Okay. I'll make you famous then. That's my goal.
Fantastic.
So in the next season... Because that's kind of our shtick here, is we're going to come back in the next season and see where you're at in terms of your book.
Right.
All right. Our last question.
Uh-huh.
That's the eighth question.
The eighth question,
yes.
The Ocho.
What do you dislike most about the art world?
Just the accessibility of the professional art world. Like okay. I said, I had a long-running dream and belief that I would be really good at writing comics.
Mm-hmm.
I had no way of getting into that profession. It growing up in rural Ontario, there's just no connection to that world. Going into university in Guelph, Ontario, I met people that did illustrative art,
sure.
And we did comics together. But those comics, they exist for themselves. They didn't actually. You couldn't balloon that into becoming part of that the professional comic book world, because these stories predate the internet. So yeah, there wasn't an internet that we could put up our stuff on and go, hey, look, and mm-hmm. gather an audience that way. It was just, hey, look, and amongst
show it
our
to
friends.
Your friends and yeah. the people around.
Yeah, but since they weren't hiring comic yeah. book writers and artists, we weren't getting hired as comic book writers and artists.
Right.
I think now with the internet and with social media, it's a lot easier to be discovered or to self-grow mm-hmm. an audience by a careful management of your online presence.
Okay.
Setting up your own website and putting your own art up, and people will find you.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the bare minimum of going onto like DeviantArt or talking on blogs or
sure.
on message boards and that sort of thing, you can grow a credible audience that will allow you to make a living doing that thing.
Gosh.
You just have to be dedicated enough to do it.
Mm.
You still have to go out and find your audience.
Absolutely, you do. Absolutely. It seems like it's easier these days, but then there's so many audiences out there and so many ways to grab that audience. You know, you DeviantArt, going on blogs, going on podcasts, the Twitter, the
right.
Facebook, you know, I remember MySpace.
Yeah. Instagram.
GeoCities. Yahoo GeoCities. Oh, my God, you know.
Right.
Bulletin board systems. And that technology isn't maybe 20 years old.
Right.
You know, 20 years is nothing.
But I see it in my daughter, mm-hmm. who's grown up with the internet being an ever-present thing,
yeah.
that she has an expectation of things being seen if she puts them up in places. Like she knows how to market
oh, yeah.
a post so that it gets retweeted or it gets mm-hmm. Reblogged or it gets re-something.
Yeah, you got it. Reblogged, retweeted on the Twitter.
Right.
So you got that one right.
I got that one right.
You got that one right. So yeah, you're 7.5 points. You didn't lose anything. There was no risk. There's a lot of great answers here. Mike, so as we close this interview, again, our touchstone, as you well know, is create more than you consume.
Right.
Can you talk to me a little bit on what does that mean to you? How do you want to encourage people to go out there and try that passion? Go out there and try that art. You know, how do you recommend doing that? And then any fart that you'd like to do.
You old fart. We're talking to you.
Yeah, I'm an old fart. But yeah, create more than you consume. What does that mean to you?
I think it's a matter of courage.
Mm-hmm.
I think that in terms of My mother had a phrase. I don't know if she stole it from somewhere, so I'm going to say the phrase, and then in the comments someone can like, no, that came from, you know, Derrida's book, and it wasn't your mom at all, and I'll like, screw you, it was still my mom. So, but she used to say, Mike, have faith in the victory of the vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
and by which she meant being open to experience. You're going to get hurt, but the experiences that you have the ability to have by being open. You only allow yourself to have that great joy, those great loves, the great passion by being open to being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And have faith in the victory of the vulnerable was her mantra for being open to that, being vulnerable and being open to those experiences. As someone who creates, you have to be vulnerable. You have to be open. You have to, if I could go back and talk to that younger self, I'd be, hunt down those artist types and make them draw your comics and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But I was crazy shy and wasn't willing to be open to that rejection. That I think that creative types were, like I said, we're our own harshest critics. We can never believe that somebody else is interested enough in the things that we are interested in creating to pay for them or to find them valuable.
Mm-hmm.
The value always stays sort of in our heads, and it's a nebulous, not real thing until you have the courage to put it down on paper, to have the courage to put it up on the canvas, to have the courage to stand in front of an audience and recite, to have the courage to stand in front of a competitive board and perform. It's all, I don't know, it's all just in your head,
mm-hmm.
and it's safe. You can believe that it's got value and not risk people telling you that it sucks.
Gotcha.
The only way that you get that affirmation, though, is by putting it out and being vulnerable.
Very good. Great words for us all to think about, folks. So we're going to sign off here at this point. My name's Timothy Kimo Bryant. You've been listening to Kimo's Den of Iniquity. My guest today has been the Inimitable.
Inimitable?
Inimitable.
What does that word mean?
Oh, well, we'll put it in the show notes. Without definition, without compare, the Inimitable. Mike Porter from his comic book shop here in good old Fredericksburg, Virginia.
And what's the name of that comic book shop?
And that comic book shop is Little Fish Comics.
Right, which you should come to. You're hearing this on December 30th. So yes. You'll have one day to come here. And if you tell me you came from the podcast, I'll give you something at 65% off.
Amazing, folks. 65% off. It'll be a one-day sale for all those KDOI podcast listeners. Because this is coming out on the 30th of December, folks.
And we close on the 31st.
And they close on the 31st. And I'm getting a truck so that way I can, hook it up and, shovel stuff into a truck.
Fantastic. I look forward to seeing you in your truck.
Very good.
Thanks for letting me ramble and be uncomfortable on your podcast.
Hey, thanks for being on my uncomfortable podcast and letting me ramble. All right, everyone. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Have a great 2018. And remember, if you want to be on the show, kdoipodcasting@gmail.com. And our website, kdoipodcasting.com. Get on there, show us your art, show us what you got, and we'll show you what we got. Have a great day.
DJ Vulture, take us out.
DJ Vulture, it's all you.
Hey, thank you for listening to Cree Art Podcast. This has been a KDOI rebroadcast, and we've interviewed Mike Porter, who used to run a comic book shop here in Fredericksburg, Virginia, had a wonderful conversation about what it means to be an artist and his views on art in general. If you'd like to be on the show, or if you have ideas for the show, or if you got something out of the show, please shoot me an email, Timothy@createartpodcast.com. You can go to our website. You can get all the show notes, all the links, all the poetry, everything that we're doing there. Go right to createartpodcast.com and get your art on. So, as I always like to say at the close of the show, tame your inner critic, Create more than you consume. Go make some art for somebody you love. Yourself. We'll see you next time.